says, "Listen, my sons, to a father's discipline, and pay attention so that you may gain understanding. For I am giving you good instruction. Don't abandon my teaching. When I was a son with my father, tender and precious to my mother, he taught me and said, 'Your heart must hold to my words. Keep my commands and live.'" Amen.
Grandfathers and grandsons, fathers and daughters, mothers and sons, Book of Proverbs, it's a rich book. It's an incredibly rich book. We've been exploring this whole subject of wisdom. We started right from the beginning and we've been working our way through. And I hope that you've caught at least a little of the sense of wisdom's great importance. To be in this school of wisdom is of the utmost importance. Indeed, it's a matter of life and death and eternal destiny. Now, having worked our way through the introduction and the first speech of the father to his son, we come now to something new. A new voice emerges in the middle of chapter 1. It's the voice of wisdom itself. Verse 20, "Wisdom shouts in the streets. She lifts her voice in the square. At the head of the noisy streets, she cries out. At the entrance of the gates in the city, she utters her sayings." You'll perhaps remember, even if you don't, I'll remind you, that in this first 9 chapters of the book of Proverbs, there's 12 speeches or 12 poetic appeals that are found, and 10 of these appeals are in the voice of the father. "My son," he says, "my son," over and over again, and that's the marker for each new poem of wisdom, is this phrase, "my son." 10 of these are in the voice of the father, but 2 of those poems are in the voice of wisdom itself. And so here we've come upon the first of wisdom's appeals, "Wisdom shouts in the streets." So now, instead of beginning to look at this first appeal of wisdom, I want instead to ask the following question. Why does wisdom speak at all? After all, the bulk of the material in these 9 chapters is from the father. There's a father-to-son conversation. Even in the rest of the book, it remains the same. When wisdom is being dispensed, it is spoken of in the main on the horizontal level, father to son, mother to son, and thus throughout the family and the community as a whole. Why then should wisdom itself speak up and interrupt this flow, as it were? But then, of course, we could turn the question on its head, and we could ask, why does the father speak up at all? After all, God is the source of wisdom. That is certainly clear to any who have any sort of faith, or to all who have any sort of faith. Why then should we even hear from the Father, from the earthly human Father? Why should we be concerned with what a father has to say to his children? If God is speaking, what need is there for the human voice speaking into the life of the child? I've asked these questions to stimulate our thinking, but the obvious and clear answer is that it's God's intent and His plan that He should work together with parents in a cooperative relationship for the salvation of their children. And it is this pattern in the book of Proverbs, the pattern of both father speaking and wisdom, or God speaking, that demonstrates that this is God's intent and the only safe way. The only way to effectively transmit the love and truth of God to each new generation. But having asserted this, allow me to show you in the book itself just how this comes through and is apparent in the book of Proverbs. We want to first note that in Proverbs, there is a consistent parallel between the words of the parents and the words that come from wisdom's mouth. In other words, the message is the same. What wisdom speaks, the father speaks. There he is. Mic cut out a second, but what wisdom speaks, the father speaks. And what the father speaks, wisdom speaks. Let's quickly note the following as an illustration of what I'm saying. Turn there and look with me in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 23. This is from that initial speech of wisdom. And you find words like this. Turn to my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit on you. I will make my words known to you. And then we look over into chapter 2, going back to a speech of the fathers. Chapter 2, verse 2, make your ear attentive to wisdom. Do you see the way it's connected? The assumption is that wisdom is speaking, just like we found in chapter 1. Here the Father is saying, make your ear attentive to wisdom's voice. Incline your heart to understanding. He's encouraging his son. Then you look also up there in verses 6 and 7. For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity. You see the connection. The father's speech, the father's encouragement constantly assumes that wisdom itself, the Spirit of God or the intercessor Christ reaching out to humanity, the constant assumption in the father's encouragement and instruction to his son is that there is another speaking and not just he. And so you find these woven together in this way. You can look also at verse 32. There's another parallel there. Verse 32, chapter 1. For the waywardness of the naive will kill them, wisdom says. And the complacency of fools will destroy them. Ah, but he who listens to me shall live securely and will be at ease from the dread of evil. There's wisdom's voice encouraging us that to not seek wisdom, to remain in the path of the wayward or the naive, is to end up in big trouble. That's wisdom's voice. But he also tells us if you listen, you'll be secure and free from the dread of evil. That's wisdom's message. But then we turn over into chapter 2 again. Chapter 2, verse 18. We hear parallels. We hear a connection with the message wisdom has given. But again, this time it's coming through the instruction of the earthly father, warning him away from the adulteress, from the strange woman who flatters with her words. And then he says, for her house sinks down to death, and her tracks lead to the dead. You hear the connection there? The waywardness of the naive will kill them. And here the father is speaking, don't go there, don't follow this kind of person, for it leads to death. None, verse 19, chapter 2, 19, none who go to her return again, nor do they reach the paths of life. You can see there the connections. Then down in verse 21 and 22, the emphasis on security. If you'll listen to wisdom, you'll be secure from the dread of evil. And the Father picks up this same emphasis. Verse 21, for the upright will live in the land, and the blameless will remain in it. But the wicked will be cut off from the land, and the treacherous will be uprooted from it. Do you see the parallels? Do you see the way these things are woven together? The voice of wisdom, parallel, along with it, the voice of the Father. Look at this quote that I took from this scholar, M.V. Fox, who can read it together with me. Parental authority is a channel for communication of God's will. The two sources of authority reinforce each other, and in places where only one is mentioned, the other is not thereby excluded. Do you see this message of the book of Proverbs? It's there's this great need for the young to receive good guidance, for the young to receive into their hearts the love of God's truth and God's wisdom. And there's that tendency, that struggle in young hearts, drawn away to other things, to other paths. And yet God and the Father and the Mother working together to place each young child on vantage ground. In places where only one is mentioned, the other is not thereby excluded. Now, having seen this parallel between the two voices, that of God and the earthly Father, allow me to point out several related matters. These are deductions from this basic fact of cooperation between God and parents in the life of the child. So here's the first one. I'm going to go through four of these. It's the bulk of the rest of what I have to say. Deductions from this basic fact of cooperation. Number one, it is the word and the presence of parents which is paramount in the child's life, not the word and presence of peers. It's the word and the presence of parents which is paramount, not the words and the presence of our children's peers. Every time in the book of Proverbs that peer influence becomes paramount in the experience of the youth, it is negative and destructive. Every time. It is the parent initially, and then God Himself in connection with the parent, who is to have weight and influence in the life of the young, not the unformed and uninformed peers. It's the parents that should have the greatest weight. This has been and continues to be a difficult challenge in society today, given the predominant patterns of modern life. I do not blame you. It's a struggle that all of us share. But given the structure of our economy, the fast-paced nature of the business world, the cost of living always rising, there are hard choices for parents to make. Do we choose a lifestyle that allows us to live here, but then necessitates that we hardly ever see our children? Or do we accept a lower standard of living, still sufficient, still with all that we really need, to make sure that we've had the time with our children that they need? It's a struggle. It's not easy in this society today. And some are unable, even in spite of their best intentions. Both parents have to work to keep the head above financial waters. Both parents have to work, and then with both parents working, the children spend a great deal more time with their peers than with their parents. This is a tremendous challenge. We face it, we should face it as a community, the parents together, the elders at the gate, to refer to this pattern that they knew in the time of Proverbs. Men in the community, women getting together, working on these problems. Not just kind of shrugging our shoulders and saying, well, what can we do? This is the way society is. We need to be together. We need to be asking the hard questions. We need to be taking up these challenges that people are facing in our midst, in our community, and saying, are there better ways? And even if a parent, a couple can't escape both parents being full-time engaged in the workplace, even if they can't escape that, can the community step in? Can the community find ways to compensate and make sure those children are not just left in the company of their peers alone, but with other adults who have the wisdom and the love and the grace to guide them well and to build bonds with them and to set their feet on solid ground? We've got to face these challenges together. We should be expending considerable mental and spiritual effort in figuring out how to protect our children from peer overload as their parents face the demands of living in an economy like ours. So number one, again, it's the word and the presence of parents in the book of Proverbs, which is paramount, not the word and the presence of peers. And we need to find ways as a community to make sure we stay with that pattern. This brings our attention to a related cultural trend, which in my thinking can have nothing but ill effect. I state it here in the form of another assertion. We rob the young of one of their greatest assets when we imply that they are equals with ourselves. You know the way things are in society today, the great push for a complete, what's called egalitarianism. It kind of shocked my wife and I when we took Madison and Morgan to their new school. And all the adults immediately said, oh, no, no, don't call me Mr. So-and-so. My name's Fred. My name's Judy. It's the clearest, one of the clearest signs of this trend in our culture is that there is to be no distinction. Distinctions have become a bad word in our culture. Not so in the book of Proverbs. Are we going to follow the Word of God, or are we going to follow the culture around us? Distinctions are not a bad word. Young people should look up to the adults in their lives. Young people should have respect for the adults in their lives. These formal distinctions that we have come to think in our day are useless and meaningless, and we even consider them at times demeaning. They're not demeaning. They set the proper tone for things. For a child to call an adult Mr. or Mrs. establishes them in a proper relationship to that adult. They are the ones who need help. They are the ones who need instruction. They are the ones who need the adult to be greater than they are so that that adult can lift them up. Children are not our equals. They have much to learn. They have character to build that hopefully we have built. They have a right perception to acquire. They have gullibility and naivete to shake off, virtue and the rejection of the faults to build up in their lives. No, they should not be considered as equals. But in case you're pushing back in your heart against me, you're probably not. But if the culture has gotten to you too much, you might be. Just in case you are, listen to this next sentence. They may not be our equals, but it should be our great passion to grow them up into equals. Oh, do you see that? Don't put them up on our level. It denies their need for growth. It denies their need for a humble learning stance to learn from the adults in their lives. But lift them. Lift them. It should be our passion to grow them up so that they become our equals. And for this to be accomplished, there must be men and women around them that stand head and shoulders above. As adults, we should be paragons of wisdom for the young people in our lives. These things being true, one of the greatest curses in society today is the whole-scale leveling of adults and children all onto one plane. By this, we imply to the child that his perception of things is just as valid as our own. It's a complete denial of the premise of Proverbs that the young have much to learn, that the young need parental guidance, that the young need elders in the community who have long labored to gain wisdom so that they can plant the young people's feet on vantage ground. Oh, and by this leveling, we rob the children of someone to look up to, of someone that they can see before them and long to emulate. No, you will not find this modern pattern in the book of Proverbs, and for good reason. It's not in my notes, but I'll go ahead and mention it. I've really wrestled in my heart because I'm affected too by the modern ethos and what we have all around us. And you know, when I came here, people asked me, well, what should we call you? And I thought about this and I thought about this. And you may have noticed, some of you who get emails from me now and then, I signed my name Pastor Wilcox. Now, that's not easy for me to do when I'm writing to Frank or Clyde or Judy or people who are older than I am. But just so you know, I'm doing that for the children in this congregation. I'm doing it for the teenagers. Because it's my conviction that we need to push back against this tide that levels everyone out and equalizes them. And it's important for young people to still call adults by their last name. So if you older folk would humor me, I'm sticking with it. Pastor Wilcox. And I've reflected on this and I've thought, well, is it really a problem, that big a problem for the old folks? And I remembered that with my pastor in Greeley Hill, before I became the pastor, I called David Pastor Bellow all the time. And he was younger than me. So again, I just wanted to throw that in. This is why you may see when I write you an email or a letter or something, it's going to say Pastor Wilcox. It's not because I need that from you who are older than me. It's for the sake of the young. It's for the sake of the youth. It's a little token, I know, but we've got to push back wherever we can. Number three, we must also assert, here it comes closer to home, parents. We must also assert that a parent's words and a parent's actions must match. Words alone will never do. Mere teaching, mere doctrine, lip service to such. We can formally embrace the Christian faith its doctrines, its teaching, but formally embraced, but not vitally embraced, right teaching has no power to mold the life of the young. We wrestle with this question, why are we losing so many Adventist young people these days? We've got to search our hearts. Have I lived what I've mouthed? Have I lived out what I've been teaching? If your greatest love in life is God, and not something else, your children will catch that. Has a great power, a compelling power. Truth, when it is your greatest love, will have drawing power in the life of your child. But it only has this power when it is embodied in the life. Love something else. Did I just lose that? There it is again. Love something else. Give something else preeminence, and they will catch that instead of the love of God. Do you see the responsibility that we have in our children's lives? Our lives have a tremendous impact upon their lives. I can remember, I was 12 years old. The winter night, and it had been raining hard most of the night. And about 4 in the morning, maybe 3:30, I can't remember exactly, there was a tremendous crash of thunder because lightning had come so close to the house. Boom, boom, boom. You know how it is. I like it. I love that. But it awakened me, 12-year-old boy, and I don't know how I saw the light because our bedroom was down a hallway. Maybe I got up to went to go to the bathroom. I don't remember. But I noticed that the light was on in the main sitting room where the fireplace was. And so I went and peeked around the corner. And there I saw my father, his back to me, sitting on the couch. And I was at that age when boys' greatest desire is to connect with their dad, build that bond. And so I ran out there. My dad had his Bible open on his lap. 4 in the morning, he's up. My dad wasn't always that way, but God had gotten hold of his heart. And now the thing that the one he loved most was God, and nothing else could take God's place. And there he was sitting on the couch with his Bible, and he didn't let me sit there long. But I sat there a little bit. He gave me a hug and sent me back to bed. But I can't tell you the weight of that impression upon my young heart. What we do, they will do. What we don't do, they won't do. And it's the action and the commitment of the life that counts, not just sitting here in a pew, not just going through the formal motions of religion, but pursuing the Lord with all the heart. That's what has influence and power in the life of the young people around us. I think of another story. We had been in Albania, maybe about a year. And the Kosovo refugee crisis was on. The Serbs were engaged in ethnic purging up in Kosovo. Kosovars are ethnically Albanian. They speak the same language, but with a different accent. So down they came into Albania, and in our city we were helping out at the major sports center, a large gymnasium. They had it full of mattresses and Kosovar families there, and we were helping to distribute food and so forth for them. And one of the local government guys, He starts talking to me. He didn't know any English, and my Albanian was very, very limited still. But he said to me, he said, Berti, that's what they call me there, Berti, he said, I'd really like it if my teenage son could go to your church. And I listened to him a little bit, and then I told that father this. I said, you know, in my experience, you want your son to gain the virtue represented by the Christian faith, the solidity of life and character. I said, you need to come to our church. Your son ultimately is going to do what you do. Oh, it took him aback. In Albania, the adults loved the Christian churches. They thought it was a good place to send their kids to get a little virtue rubbed off on them. But they themselves had no interest. And I told that father, it doesn't work that way. Your son's going to follow more than likely, not always, but he's going to follow in the path that you have set for him. And so it must be more than just words. The whole pattern of our lives must match the message we seek to convey to our children. Finally, Proverbs would teach us that though the word and instruction of both parents is vital, get ready, dads. Though the word and instruction of both parents is vital, the father's leadership and example has the greatest weight. It's the father's instruction and the father's example that provides the vital anchor of the family and, by extension, the community as a whole. Let me quote for you the statement of Bruce Waltke in his commentary on Proverbs as he distills the teaching of Proverbs on this whole question of the father's role. Here it is. Instead of mentioning his daughter, he's referring here to Proverbs 4, verses 3 and 4. Instead of mentioning his daughter, the father singles out his son because the male offspring is expected to assume the leadership in defining the family's identity and values. You get that, men? The male offspring expected to assume the leadership. It's often not that way. You know the joke. The wife will say, oh, I have three sons. Oh, excuse me, that's four. Fathers who haven't yet grown up, not shouldering the leadership. Make no mistake, gentlemen, we have been given a weighty responsibility before God. And we should exert every effort to fulfill it. He knows we're not all perfect. He knows that many of us didn't have very good fathers ourselves. He knows the weaknesses and the shortcomings. But if you put your hand in His, if you step up to the plate, He will help you. He will strengthen you to be the kind of father that can establish your children on a solid foundation for life. Yes, we've been given a weighty responsibility, the identity and values of our families. We are to lead in making sure that they are well formed and rightly formed. Listen to yet another quote from the magazine First Things. This quote will blow you away. It did me when I first read it. There we go, second supporting quote. A study of Swiss churchgoers commissioned by the Council of Europe found that if a mother attends church regularly, but the father is non-practicing, only 2% of their children will attend church regularly in adult life. Can you believe that? These are amazing. I know statistics can be bent this way or that, but it's pretty hard to bend that kind of percentage. Only 2% if it's only the mother taking leadership spiritually in the home. Read on. If the roles are reversed, with the father attending regularly and the mother non-practicing, the figure for regular attendance in adult children shoots up to 44%. Gentlemen, if you doubted that you have tremendous weight and influence, you need doubt no longer. That figure is higher even than the figure when both the parents attend regularly. Oh, but then listen to this. He now references another study from the American context. Another study found that when an American mother converts to the faith, there is a 17% chance that the rest of her family will follow. When the father alone converts, this figure rises to 93%. Proverbs would teach us that though the word and instruction of both parents, I would not have ever wanted to raise my girls without Kelly. She's been like gold. The word and instruction of both parents is vital. The father's leadership and example has the greatest weight. When the father alone converts, the figure rises from 17 to 93%. Conclusion. We are the children's potting soil. We are their potting soil. A different kind of potting soil. Anybody who knows anything about growing things, plants and trees, knows that the vital element is the soil in which that plant is rooted. My mom has a cherry tree in her garden. It's a fenced garden because we have deer up in Greeley Hill. She has a cherry tree there. She has apple trees and other trees too, and some of them put out fruit fitfully here and there. But then Clint came along. Clint's a master gardener. He said to my mom, he said, "Marilyn, you do not have the best environment for your trees." And it so happened that the loggers had been busy. We had all these dead trees, 70% tree death in the community we just moved from because of the drought and the beetles. So there were all these trees down, and a lot of the limbs they'd chip up when they came, and we had huge mounds of tree chips. Clint said, "Marilyn, you need to spread those chips a foot deep all through your orchard." She said, "Okay, do it, Clint." So he did it. Spread it all out, foot thick. Not only keeps the weeds down, he said it will do something for the trees that you won't believe. Sure enough, it creates a different acidity in the soil, or maybe it was the lack of acidity or something, creates a climate in the soil, and I couldn't believe it. Here we had this cherry tree, this one cherry tree that Mom always said, "Well, it's a pollinator." It never had any cherries. 2 years into this chip experience, I couldn't believe it. I was there last Sunday, I looked at that tree, there was cherries all over it. The soil makes a difference. Make the soil rich, and chances are much better that good trees will grow. Let the soil grow poor, and there is little hope for the next generation. Oh, but Porterville Church, we have the privilege. We have the privilege and the opportunity and the help from God to make this here place rich soil. Not just for the kids in our congregation. Not just for the kids who don't even have a father in the home. We want to make it rich for them. You think, well, my kids are grown up and gone. Good words, Pastor, but they don't really apply anymore. Oh, don't think that way. We need every single parent in this community to father every and father and mother every single child as appropriate. I recognize not everything's appropriate. You don't barge in and take over the instruction of another's child. You work with them, you support them, you build them up. We have the privilege not only of building a rich soil here for kids to come to have a solid foundation, but we have the privilege of building that kind of soil not only for our kids, but for kids we haven't met yet out in the streets of this city. Kids growing up with parents who themselves were never parented. Oh, we have that privilege. This is the vision. This is the vision of the book of Proverbs for us. That as a Christian community, we become the kind of rooting place where God can lift young people out of the moral wasteland that is our culture today, plant them here in our midst, and make them real children of God. Oh, may God help us to catch this vision. Let's bow our heads. Lord Jesus, thank you for this book. I know it cost Solomon a lot to write it. Must have pained his heart as he looked at his own folly, even after he had been given such wisdom. But then, Lord, he knew and he taught us, and he extends to us these precious lessons. Oh, Lord, may we step up to the plate and take our place in the link between heaven and earth so that the young people in our lives have good soil to grow in. In your name we pray. Amen.